I believe writers provide a level of witness that can be precise, far-reaching, and prophetic. Which is why writing during a time of social change, upheaval, is completely necessary.
Welcome to the Writer's Block. This space is for aspiring writers, indie and published authors who desire tips, tricks, and tools to foster confidence in your ability to write. This space is also for voice actors, editors, and literary agents. All those people whom are writing adjacent. Let this space be a haven, a resource, and a reminder you can write all you see and see all you write. Grab your pens. We're about to circle the block.
If you ask me now, when my writing began to turn, and when I say turn, I mean expand. When everything happened in Ferguson, or what history will probably denote as the Ferguson Uprising, I was married to the man who gave me his last name. And there's a reason why I hyphenate it now. Because I am Jennifer Bush minus Harris. And I remember where I was when Michael Brown Jr. was murdered. I remember who was in the car. I remember the state of the road we were on. I remember all of that. And I remember I had already kind of started blogging thanks to friend of the show and eternal sister friend, Winnie Caldwell, who is the momager of Books and Bros, which is now based out of Atlanta, Georgia. I love Winnie. I remember that, and she probably does also, that I was interested in blogging, right? I had heard about this thing called blogging. I knew Lovey Ajayi Jones, you know, blogged. But I also remember that for everything that I had like put on Facebook, these really long posts and all the other things I had on my desktop, I knew there was more I had to say. And I remember I did the blogger workshop that Winnie had at the time. Her married name now is Thompson. I almost called her Caldwell. She's not Caldwell anymore. She's Winnie Thompson. And we did it over the phone. I sent her $25 because I meant to do it in person, but I was working overnight and fell asleep. And I missed her workshop. So I remember I messaged her. I called her. I sent her the money. And we literally did the workshop over the phone. That's how determined I was to write. And to get this blogging thing under control, right? To get this new skill. And I remember getting off the phone with her, being really empowered. And this was 2014, 15 that I started blogging. No. Cause the Ideal Fire Starter was the first blog that I'd started. Well, it was one blog I started before then, but I didn't really like it. I erased it. And talking to Winnie about, you know, getting people drawn in, she's like, the title of the blog has to be snappy. What's the tagline? I remember Winnie was the first person who did my, and she will probably laugh at this, but she is the first person who did my business cards for my blog. Cause she's like, you know, you need to be, you know, this is going to be your brand. You need to be out here. You need some cards. So she actually made my cards for me, and shouts to Rebecca Millie, who actually made my very first logo for my blog, and shouts to the ever talented Kai Ellis, who did the second iteration of the Ideal Firestarter blog. And putting everything out there, my work really began to turn it and pull in a more social justice focus after the murder of Michael Brown Jr. It forced me to expand my language to fit what I was feeling and what I was seeing. I remember feeling like I had to say something, that what was going on around me, I could not be silent about, because again, Michael Brown Jr. was killed 1-2 years after Tamir Rice was killed in Sanford, Florida. And I remember, just running amok on Facebook again before I started blogging, that I just felt that I had so much to say, and I refused to let history books whitewash what I saw in front of me happening. I just could not let that stand. I could not. And I began to draw inspiration from my childhood hero, who is Ida Bell Wells Barnett. And I really began to dig into her work and really to honor her, as it were, for being the patron saint of the ideal firestarter, of that particular space. She is the patron saint of that. And I don't take it back. And it was for that cause that I determined that I wasn't going to shut my eyes to what was happening to me, what was happening to the world around me, to the people who I loved in it, the people who are in my community. I just could not allow myself to just back up from that, as far as don't write and be so angry. And I remember my mom telling me to be careful about, what I put out. And again, my mother is a baby boomer. She was alive when Malcolm and Martin were murdered. She remembers who James Baldwin is. She also remembers that Eartha Kitt got blackballed because she made Lady Bird Johnson cry, because all Eartha did was tell the truth. Excuse me. Tell the truth about civil rights in Vietnam. So it's always been, quote unquote, dangerous for Black artists to use their platforms and gifts to resist. It's never been comfortable. And yet at the same time, I had to go forward. I had to go forward. But the turn was definitely 2014-15. I really started to hone in around social justice, bringing those things that I was seeing and thinking and feeling into the forefront, being more active on social media, being what you would call, I guess now, being more visible. So when I found out that Roxane Gay, a writer that I greatly respect, was doing her masterclass on writing in a time of social change, I had to take it. If I'm honest, her and Shonda Rhimes were the reason why I signed up for Masterclass. And I haven't forgotten about Shonda's class. I'm still going to take that. And yet I went through, quote unquote, I took Roxane Gay's class twice, which means I watched, it's like 13 videos. And what I garnered from her masterclass was the ability to be more analytical, to strip the varnish off what I was seeing, and when need be necessary, take a beat, take a pause, take 5 deep breaths, walk outside if need be necessary, to look at what I'm looking at. and to bring something to the forefront that maybe perhaps other people aren't seeing. What her class forced me to do was to look at my writing and say and demand that it be better. Not that it wasn't already good, but how could it be better? And there are other parts of her writing during the time of social change that are geared toward, you know, intellectual property and contracts before our time together now. I really want to focus on the skill of writing in a time of social change and emphasizing just how imperative it is that writers do that. Again, at the time of this recording, we know that there is still unrest. And I use that word loosely because it's really genocidal at this point. What's happening with the Israeli people and the Palestinian people? We know that at the time of this recording that the only Palestinian American woman, legislator, Congresswoman Tahid has been censured. We know that we see what is happening. We see what is happening, and we can't pretend like we don't. We can't pretend as if it's not. And this is where, again, writers do their best work. And this was said in Toni Morrison's collection of writings, The Source of Self-Regard, where she says that writers do their best work in times of upheaval, in times of stress, strife, and other social peril, which doesn't seem like it would make sense, but it does. But it does. And just to make sure, because I am who I am, it was Rashida Tlaib who was censured by Congress for speaking out about what's happening. And writers are those peculiar artists of this guild of creatives who are able to create and record. It is imperative that you as a writer not ignore that. Now, I understand that not everybody is desirous of reporting on or even weighing on social justice issues, themes, and things like that. But as a writer, you must be aware of them. Most people have, you know, quote unquote, an issue with Margaret Atwood and The Handmaid's Tale. Margaret Atwood says she didn't write anything that didn't already occur in history. And if you dig a little deeper into her novel, she got it from breeding plantations and the history surrounding those from American chattel slavery. She fictionalized that, but that actually happened. It's imperative that, again, in this dispensation, with everything happening, feeling like to everyone, it is our responsibility as writers to record what is going on and confront what we are seeing. The truth must be what we are seeing. It can't be anything that we're making up. That's like me looking outside and saying it's daytime when it's not. If I go outside and say to you that the sun is out and it's 90 degrees, as a writer, I'm supposed to carry some level of weight and truth for that. Meaning, you have to trust what I'm saying. But at the same time, you have to trust but verify. If I tell you that it's 90 degrees and sunny, and someone were to examine the exit data for this particular podcast, they would know that it's 11 o'clock at night somewhere in the Midwest in November. So what I said is not true. What we are facing right now is the assault on truth in favor of opinion. Now, here is where it gets kind of murky for the writer, right? Just like for Margaret Atwood writing her now famous novel with the backdrop of the horrors of American chattel slavery and what happened to Black women. What we are known to do as writers is we sometimes fictionalize what is going on to make it more palatable so people pay attention and can dig deeper. I'm not saying that you can't use it as a tool. And yes, that is a tool. Just like poetry is a tool in a time like this. And just like Audre Lorde said, that when you speak poetry out loud, the poem is doing its work. It is doing its work. You as a writer must put the work down in order for that portion of the assignment to be done. And you must not be fearful of that. And just like Roxane Gay said in her masterclass, that you have to be able to strip away emotionality sometimes and examine what you are seeing to be able to record that, and then even add your experiences to that, or even to make a critical analysis of what you are seeing. You have to know what is going on in the world to confront what is going on in the world. You as a writer, that is part of your responsibility. It's part of your responsibility. And you cannot forfeit that because you think, quote unquote, people won't read it. Now, again, that goes to audience, tribe, readership. Again, chosen demographic. There are many things that go along with and are influenced by what is currently happening in the world. And yet, if your demographic includes anybody who is of a minority status, you need to be writing. You need to be writing. Because the first thing that greater culture would want to do and does want to do is to whitewash, erase, stymie, or stifle anything that you're doing. Or anything that it does not necessarily agree with, right? Because then it goes back to this idea of the master narrative, that the only things that can be or are made worthy of respect are everything written by anyone who is cishet, white, and male. If you are in any way, any minority, or stand in any intersection, or have intersectionality, you need to be writing. You need to be journaling. You need to leave record of what you are seeing. To do so is a grave injustice. To do so is incredibly dangerous. There are so many people who sacrifice so much for us to get this far, and it would be an abuse of their memory, a disrespect of their memory, to not honor that and keep going. Look at the world around you. And look at the world around you. Writers have to be able to look at something from a macro level and a micro level. Even if you have to put fiction on it or a poem to it. I have done that many a time. For, because we know that next year is a presidential election. And one of my favorite indie authors I like to follow is Kyle Guante Tran, who is on Instagram, and he had the poem "Voting as a Fire Extinguisher." And the poem ends, again paraphrasing, but the poem ends saying that, well, the poem is, let me see if I can find it really quickly, because the poem itself is brilliant. It's not very long. I'll probably do that as send for a poet, but and leave Kyle's information in the show notes as well. But the poem "Voting as a Fire Extinguisher" is a reminder of just how important it is for us to protect and be aware of those who are in the world, of the world, and will be influenced by our inaction or action. But we can't lay down on the job. Not anymore. Your pen is a witness. Don't abandon your witness for the comfort of other people. A witness is supposed to be honest and observe and tell what they say. Or tell what they see and tell what they know. Writers, are still witnesses.
From the minds that brought you the smash hit podcast Your Life the Mixtape and Headliners comes Your Life the Mixtape magazine, a free monthly digital magazine that focuses on music, culture, and social commentary on current news and events. Visit www.yourlifethemixtape.com to subscribe today.
This Sin for a Poet segment is going to be a piece written by Kyle Guante Tran Myre, or Meyer. It is called Voting as a Fire Extinguisher. When the haunted house catches fire, a moment of indecision. The house was, after all, built on bones and blood and bad intentions. Everyone who enters the house feels that overwhelming dread, the evil that perhaps only fire can purge. It's tempting to just let it burn. And then I remember, there are children inside.
The time has come to leave you to your thoughts and words. The hope is that what was shared in this space was encouraging, empowering, and a catalyst to write. Special thanks to Valor Music, LLC for all audio production and mixing. All business inquiries and advertising inquiries can be sent to circlethewritersblock@gmail.com. If you feel so inclined to support the work of this podcast to continue to fight erasure of Black and minority writers, consider supporting through Cash App at $JBHWRITES, that's JBH Writes, or PayPal at SGLLC.1038@yahoo.com. We will see you next time when we circle the block.